Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Brisk, your host, and this conversation that we are about to begin today is with Lillian Rizik of South Sudan. She is currently a woman peacemaker at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego, and I am delighted to welcome Lillian to the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
So Lillian, you have a very prestigious career. You're a former senior government minister and a key member of the National Dialogues leadership. You're also the founder and CEO of the South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network. You served as the State Minister of Finance from 2013 to 2015, and you were the State Minister of Agriculture from 2012 to 2013. Where did you get your drive and motivation to become so involved in your country and your country's government?
Well, South Sudan is the newest country in the world, as you might know. It's gained its independence in 2011.
Yes.
And but before that, it went through a very bloody civil war for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited when the government, when the country got its independence. So I was very much involved in mobilizing the women, the diaspora, even here in America, mobilizing people to vote so that we can get the independence and then participate in the referendum. So with that excitement, I went back home. I was a diaspora myself. So I went back home and I saw the need. The country needed my support. So I was happily doing that.
And has this been fulfilling for you? Are you finding that in your government positions and the work you do that you're being heard, and you and other women?
Not as much as I expected. I think gender equality in South Sudan, it's in infant stages, just because of the prolonged oppression history.
Mm-hmm.
South Sudanese were part of Sudan, where Sudan was governed by Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sharia law not necessarily gave women the rights. So women in general did not have a voice in most of the decision making. So they are not necessarily having a position within the government or at state level or at the national level. So when South Sudan became a country, we inherited that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I founded the non-profit organization, South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an organization mainly focusing on advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we do research and then we advocate for women's rights. So we do research along policies, in terms of gender analysis, trying to see how is this policy going to affect women and men differently.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, we came from a patriarchal society where men are dominating the decision-making level, and we wanted to see more women coming into the peace processes, into negotiation, being mediators.
And are you personally well accepted by the men who you work alongside?
Not all the time, but
I'm sure you teach them though. Are you working on teaching them a form of acceptance?
Awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness that women have rights and then that is need to be respected. And then we have a constitution, because when we came, when we separated from Sudan, we inherited a lot of policies,
mm-hmm.
As well as the way women are viewed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's historically. So we are trying to change that perception. We are trying to tell that we are of equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
Women can be effective in any position as well as men.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an easy process, and it's still a prolonged process.
Mm-hmm. So much work still to be done.
Gotcha.
But regarding the equality, the Republic of South Sudan ratified CEDAW, which for our listeners is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. You ratified that in 2014. Has that made a difference or is making a difference?
It's a process. It's still a process, But Sidao has a very good prevention because it leveled the discrimination against women and bring it into the international basis.
Mm-hmm.
So South Sudan being a member of the United Nations,
mm-hmm.
That they are obliged to respect women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
What we do in my organization, try to highlight these rights. For example, we are trying to incorporate most of the provisions into the constitution of the country. For example, women's rights to education,
yes,
women's rights to health. You might know South Sudan has the highest maternal mortality mm-hmm. rates in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So just because women don't have access to health, women and young girls, they still walk for 5 miles back and forth just mm-hmm. to get access to water.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things that the government is supposed to provide for the people, that's what we're advocating for.
Mm-hmm. Good. And I'm hoping that you'll continue to see progress there in your country. I think for many of us, when we think of South Sudan, we don't quite know how to think of it geographically or topologically, if you like. How does it look?
Well, South Sudan, it's surrounded by about 7 or 8 countries. I don't remember, but at the very north of it is Sudan.
Yes.
The motherland.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And at the east of it is Ethiopia.
Yes.
And at the south of it is Uganda. Mm-hmm. And then you have Kenya. And then you have the west, Chad and Central Republic. So it's a landlocked country
mm-hmm.
Because we don't have access to the world. The only access we used to have was the Red Sea when we were part of Sudan in terms of port. But right now, South Sudan considered to be a landlocked country.
Yes. What's your leading export?
What do you mean?
What is the country known for with regard to its resources and its wealth?
Yeah, so, and that's one of the cause of the conflict in South Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Because, that's why I asked you.
Because the main export of South Sudan is the oil.
Yes.
We are oil producing country,
mm-hmm.
but then we are landlocked. So we don't have access to market. So we have to export our oil through Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And the country depends, 98% of the country's revenue depends on that oil.
Mm-hmm.
And also South Sudan has an ongoing conflict
mm-hmm.
because people are fighting over power. And that's why we said we need more women in decision making. It's just because women have a different perspective in viewing things. We don't intend to resort to fighting over the disagreement.
Right, or over the issue.
Over
yes.
the issues. Unlike men, I mean, when they disagree, they resort to violence.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much access to guns. We don't have access to guns. We talk, we dialogue
mm-hmm.
in order to make our points heard. So there is an ongoing conflict in South Sudan right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they are not able to diversify their revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, South Sudan was considered to be the food basket of East Africa
mm-hmm.
because of the arable land. We
mm-hmm.
have a very fertile land.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the natural resources that are still untapped.
Mm-hmm.
We have minerals, we have gold and some other stuff.
So you have sufficient to support South Sudan through its own resources to a large degree. And it seems as though with the women getting into the leadership roles that that's going to be able to be utilized, that land in the future, perhaps, because women make good farmers.
That's right. That's why they are breadwinner by nature.
Mm-hmm.
So we are hoping, and that's why we're advocating, we're hoping to see more women coming into decision-maker level. Right now, the Constitution says that women, not the Constitution, the peace agreement, says that women should have 35% representation.
35%,
mm-hmm. but that is just in paper.
Yes.
In reality.
I was going to say, what's the percentage in reality?
It's about 15 to 20%.
But it's getting there, I would assume. It's growing, but you still have a lot of growth to do.
Yeah, we're taking baby steps mm-hmm. towards that. And that's why organizations like South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network and other women's organization advocacy group are very important to advocate, to push for more women representation.
And is that part of the work that you've returned to? Because I understand using the acronym of the South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network, or SSWEN.
SWEN.
Oh, that's a nice, easy pronunciation. Thank you. You returned as a country director, and you're now very involved in the strengthening of financial management protocols and operations. What does that mean directly?
Well, I founded the organization.
You're right.
Worked as its CEO and president for 7 years, mm-hmm. and then moved to work with the government in different positions. And then when that was over, I wanted to give back to the community. I wanted to give back to the women. So I came back as an advisor, as a board chair, mm-hmm. and then helping them, sharing with them the experiences that I have learned mm-hmm. being a minister of finance, mm-hmm. Utilizing that on how to help the organization manage their finances much better in a very professional way.
Mm-hmm. Do you have microcredit?
We are in the process of that, mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I am part of this Women Peace Makers program. It's because we have issues of funding.
Mm-hmm.
So in South Sudan, we have so many donors and you have so many international organizations operating. But the challenge that we have with that is that they come with their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So their agenda right now has no provision for microcredit. So women don't have access, independent access to financing or to funding, so they can implement the programs and projects that they see it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be the case that so often when folks from other countries, I'm not going to name the United States specifically, although I just did, when we do embark on a journey to a country like South Sudan, that we think that our ways are the right ways and we don't, first of all, interview the people of the land and find out what they would like specifically. So in light of that, what would you like us to know about South Sudan or bring to South Sudan should we come and visit? What can we learn from you that would help you most?
Well, South Sudan has the largest cattle. So there are cattle.
The cattle.
Yes,
this is beef cattle,
yes,
too. Yes,
yes. In the region.
I'm from New Zealand, so I can relate to that originally because yes. I come from a very agricultural country, so I certainly can relate to the cattle.
Exactly. And I think the people there might need more information on how to turn that into revenue instead of being the source of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because the scuttle are being used as a dowry. You know what is dowry?
Yes, I do. Yes, so, that's given as part, well, a woman's husband. A woman's family has to give cattle to when her wife becomes married. When the woman, no, you explain it because I'm making a real mess of it. I know what it is, but I apologize. You tell
us. Yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. But it's the man, is the groom.
Yes.
Family has to pay to the bride. It's a bride price.
Bride price, thank
yes,
you. Yes,
the bride price. So, and that is causing problem. And so people from New Zealand can actually really share the information on how to turn that into dairy companies and then be revenue. Because what they're using it for is as a bride price and it's causing conflict because a lot of young men are involved in cattle wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And they would attack the other village because they wanted to have access to the cattle just because they wanted to get married. Or it's also contributing to gender-based violence because a brother would rather give his sister out for marriage so he can receive these cattle, so he can go and marry whoever he wanted to marry. So South Sudan has a lot of natural resources, but it's turning to be cursed instead of being a blessing, like the oil. Now people are fighting mm-hmm. over this oil revenue.
Yes.
And the oil that is being produced are causing harm to women. Nobody is benefiting, especially the area where the oil is being produced,
mm-hmm.
An area called Ruang. Women in Ruang are currently, they are having deformed babies because there's no responsibility when this oil is being extracted. So oil been leaked into the water and it contaminated the water, so the water became very toxic. Women are having miscarriages. They are having live birth. They're giving birth to deformed babies, and nobody's doing anything about that. So the focus of the government and the companies, the oil companies, is the revenue, not necessarily concerned about the health of the population within that area.
The health and the well-being. So what's the future looking like for young girls in South Sudan? Do you feel with all the work you do, there's hope for them to grow into perhaps a better and healthier future?
There is a big hope, because South Sudan to me is like a white paper. It's just a white paper that just became a country, but now we fill that white paper with a lot of blood, with a lot of fighting, with a lot of conflict. But we can turn that around. Because this country came into, we are becoming a country in 21st century. So that means there is so much we can learn from other countries that are developed by now. So unlike any other country that became a country in the 18th or 17th century, so we just have to have the hope, stick into that, and just have a strategy on how we can actually have a peaceful society.
Well, we hope that comes for you sooner rather than later. So in your role as and your residency as a woman peacemaker with three other women from Pakistan, from the United States of America, and also from Israel, are you gaining any practices that they use perhaps in their regional areas with their women that you can take back to South Sudan?
Absolutely. So coming together, learning from other fellow women peacemakers, it has actually enhanced my understanding of the scope of the women's effort in peace building around the world, as you mentioned, from Pakistan or Israel or even here in America. So it's adding more knowledge and skills on how I can use this and utilize this in strategizing for getting more women involved in peace building processes in South Sudan.
Well, that's good to hear that, because this program has been going for, I think, 19 years now, and there's quite a network of you all around the world, and it's good to hear that that's continuing and being strengthened also. So when we think of South Sudan and we think of the United States, how is the relationship between the two countries?
Well, the United States is considered to be the midwifery of giving birth to South Sudan.
To South Sudan, right.
Because they were so much involved in creating the 2005 peace agreement. The peace agreement that paved the way for the referendum, for the self-determination, for South Sudanese to decide whether they want to be part of Sudan or they want to be an independent country. And a lot of people turned out, South Sudanese turned out, and they voted for separation, and that's why we have the country. But also, the United States played a key role. After the independence, the country slipped into a civil war. Between the president and his vice president over power, and we have conflict. But then again, the United States stood with the IGAD. IGAD is the Intergovernmental Development Agency for Development. And that IGAD was mediating between Sudan, between the conflicting party within South Sudan. And the U.S. was very much involved helping that, and the result, we were able to have the current peace agreement that was signed in 2015. But then when the country again went into conflict in 2016, it's again the United States led, or is still leading, most of the donor agencies who are giving life-saving humanitarian assistance to the displaced people from the conflict. So pretty much a very effective relationship.
Good, from birth, as you say, to the growth and development.
That's right.
So unfortunately, Lillian, I think our interview time is coming to a close. So I always like to ask you to close with what you may not have covered or what you would really like our listeners to know or be aware of about South Sudan.
Well, South Sudan, as I wanted the listeners to know, that it's a new country that really needs support, and we would wanted to encourage the United Nations, the United States, all the developmental agencies to not give up on South Sudan, to continue support South Sudan so that it can have a bright future.
Thank you. And with those lovely words, we will finish this conversation. Thank you, Lillian Rizik of South Sudan, for joining us on iVow today.
Thank you for having me.